Several months ago, Father Scott was helping us with how to approach stewardship in our parish, because people are always moving and coming and going, and he focused our attention on something that has been echoing in my mind ever since then. He focused our attention on we're all in this together. Now, at first, that can sound like a slogan, and it is kind of a slogan. We're all in this together. And what he meant by that is, even though I think it's sometimes humorous, I've had throughout the years several times people come up to me and say, so how much money does the bishop send you so that you can run the church? And I sort of scratch my head and I go, bishop doesn't send me money. We have to send him money. It's the opposite. And somehow, you know, people think that we just have somewhere this humongous amount of money buried underneath the church or something like that. Anyway, let me disabuse you of that. It ain't there. What Father Scott was saying to us is that if we're going to carry on the mission of the church, the mission of what we're supposed to be doing, being all in this together, that it has to be our corporate responsibility. He said something that I've never forgotten ever since then, too. Because, you know, I've been a priest 36 years. No, 38. Yeah, 38 years. And money has never been my favorite topic, you know, to talk about. But he said something that gave me a lot of pause, and that, he said, any church that never asks you for support is a church that's doing nothing. Because you can run a church on tiny little expenses, but of course the fact is that you're doing nothing. You're just setting up the building and maybe having a mass and having everybody go home, and that's it. So when Father Scott, because I've put him in charge of our stewardship program, and that's what we're talking about this Sunday. We talk about this once or twice a year. But it struck me that I would like to talk to you about it from a specific point of view. A specific point of view that has become all the more clearer for me ever since Pope Francis was here in the United States. And what was accomplished by Pope Francis being in the United States. Let me approach what we're all in this together has come, how I have come to understand it. Whether we realize it or not, our families are growing up now in an environment that is hostile to Christianity. The environment itself, the cultural environment itself, is hostile to Christianity. Every time you turn around, you see, little by little, the teaching that was considered normal in a Christian society 40, 50, 60 years ago, slowly, it's being turned on its head to the point that if you hold publicly any of the, shall we say, protected areas, such as, you know, the whole issue of gay marriage, transgenderism, a whole host of issues, that before you know it, you are considered engaging in hate speech. And more, what's happening is that it's already being talked about that if the churches don't get with the program of where the United States is headed culturally and to some degree politically, that there's already been talk about the issue of removing tax-exempt status from the churches. And this is something that is also starting to affect Catholic education. It's affecting Catholic hospitals. And it's affecting all kinds of different ministries. If you don't toe the line of what is called secularism, then you are considered either religious extremism. And more, and I believe it'll happen because it's already happening to a larger degree in Canada and in some places in Europe, that the church will become even more and more, no, not the church, Christianity will become more and more the sole responsibility of privatized churches. Churches that will no longer be supported by anything of the state, including tax-exempt status. I don't know if you know, but if we had to pay taxes here, you talk about a budget crisis would be amazing. But here's the point where I want to start drawing for you the picture. Because we are engaged, whenever you come here to church, you are receiving a message that, as I said to you, is increasingly considered out of place in the public square. You're receiving a message that, to some degree, by a lot of people, it is considered almost hate speech. Now, let me do comparison, because the comparison that you need to understand is the comparison between the worldview that is being propagated by a large majority of the culture and the worldview of the Christian tradition. Notice I'm using the word worldview. The reason I use the word worldview instead of religion, because worldview is just another way of saying your religion. Every religion and every worldview, which in my opinion are the same thing, has to answer four questions. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the two dominant worldviews next to each other and compare them for you. The worldview called secularism, which is what most of America now is, and on the other side, Christianity. The two different worldviews. And they have to answer these four questions. What are the four questions? First question. What is the origin of the universe and the origin of the human person? Every religion or every worldview has to answer that. Now, how does secularism answer that? Secularism basically says there is no God. Matter, the only answer that they have, is that matter is somehow eternal. And that the universe has been eternal. Now, that doesn't make sense to me, but that's the answer that they give it. Since there is no creator, the universe is eternal. All there is matter. There is nothing else. And as in terms of the origins of the human person, you are basically a fairly complicated arrangement of matter dressed in designer clothes. That's basically what you are. You're a complicated arrangement of matter with clothes. Right? Now, the Christian worldview has a very different understanding. We understand that the origin of the universe is a God who is being himself. I always get God is not an object. I always get an image of Moses standing before the burning bush. And Moses says to God, "Whom should I tell them is sending me?" He wants to know God's name. And God from the burning bush says, "Tell them I am." And I can almost see Moses going, "You are what?" Now, I want you to notice what's missing from the sentence, "I am." You have a subject, and you have a verb. You have no object. Why? Because what God is saying is, he is not an object. He is. That's it. He is. He is the isness of isness. He is. Okay? We understand, we Christians understand, that we have been created by is. We have been created by him. And we understand that is, I am, created us in his image and likeness. We are creatures. And so our origin comes from him. We are something that is called contingent beings. You know what a contingent being is? It's a being that doesn't have to be. You don't have to be. This universe could have gotten well without you. You are, but you didn't have to be. You're contingent. Somebody brought you into existence, and they didn't even know who they were bringing in. They just knew that it was a kid. They didn't know it was you. And so the Christian understanding already says, you are creatures. You're not in charge of the universe. There is a God who is in charge of the universe. Now notice the comparison between the two. In the secular world, matter is eternal, and we just happen to just sort of occur. And we're here. In the Christian tradition, we are creatures. Second question. Does the universe and your life have any meaning whatsoever inherently, in and of itself? Or is any meaning totally made up by you, so that you are living in a meaningless universe? This is secularism. You're living in a meaningless universe, and the only meaning that has any relevancy is the meaning that you give your life. Period. There is no other meaning. The Christian worldview, no. You were created to have a relationship with being, with Him, with God. And you were created to experience His essence, which is love. You were created to grow, to participate in creation. You were created, and the meaning of your life is to give life and to participate in love. Two different worldviews. Question number three. Is there any morality at all? Is there any right and wrong in life itself? Or is right and wrong only what you decide it is? For the secularist, there is no right or wrong, because the matter is all there is. There is no meaning in the universe, and right or wrong is all made up by people in different cultures and in different families. There's no objective right or wrong. For a Christian, or for a religious person, Jewish Christian, is there right and wrong? Yes, there is. And God has given us very specific moral codes that we are to live by, that we are to live, and we are not free to decide that something that is evil shall become good because I say so. You can't do that. And so in the Christian tradition, and the Jewish tradition too, you have a creator that is telling you that you are already designed with a moral code. And then the last question. What is the future? What is the future of the universe and humanity? In the secular perspective, the future of humanity and the universe is that ultimately we will live in this world for maybe a few thousand more years, and that sooner or later, every one of us is going to be dead, and the planet itself is going to be dead. No one will remember anything. No one will remember, and no one cares about anything. So you better enjoy now, because all you have in your future is dead. And on top of that, the universe will continue expanding until it is nothing but cold matter, trillions and quadrillions and years away, and everything is dark and cold. All the suns will burn out. What does the Christian tradition say? No. God created the universe, and He created it with a specific purpose. And the universe is still under construction. And at the end of time, the same person who created it will bring it to its fulfillment. We don't know what that will look like, but He has told us that it is not yet completed, and that you are not yet completed, and that the fullness of our being and the fullness of the universe still lies in the future as the completion of humanity and the universe. By the way, we call that heaven periodically. Now, notice the four questions then. The question of origins. Where did it come from? The secular point of view and the Christian. The question of meaning. Does the universe have any meaning? No. Christianity? Yes. Morality. Does there any morality? No. Do what you want. There is no moral code. Yes, God made us. The question of the future. Is there any future to human life? No. Yes. Now, what you have is the two competing worldviews. And here's the critical part about it. Because we keep on pounding and pounding and pounding on this, quote, separation of church and state, which, by the way, is a good thing. But when the separation of church and state, when the founding fathers expressed that, what they were thinking, and if you read the Constitution, it says Congress shall make no law regarding an establishment of religion. What they were thinking about was England. In England, Henry VIII had made the Church of England the only church. And if you did not participate in the Church of England and swear your allegiance to the king as head of the church, you could be executed. It was the official Church of England. The founding fathers said, we don't want a church of the United States. They had no intention of separating religion from public life. They just didn't want an official United States church. But what have we done with it? We have come to the point that anytime you have any kind of religious statement, immediately it is being removed from anything that touches on the public. And so what is happening? And this is where it's going to touch on us. Any of you who have kids, for example, who go to public schools, the kids in public schools today are growing with teachers that hold secularism as their worldview. You send any of your kids to college, and what they're getting are professors that are laughing at them for being Catholic, for being Christian. The kids in high school and in grade schools, morality isn't even touched. Why? Because you might impose your religion on them. Because there is no source of morality. If there is no God, there is no meaning, there is no morality. Oh, your mom and dad want to do it that way? That's fine. That's their morality. And so what's happening is, you send your kids to school, you turn on the TV. You know, I'm amazed, and I catch myself periodically, and I go, wow, what am I laughing at? People in comedies and in all kinds of places treat each other as if, for example, sexuality is just meaningless. Who are you sleeping with? Well, ha, 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 you know, whatever. Oh, you got some last night. You know? And as if there was no sense of meaning whatsoever. I want you to notice the values that are being taught to you and to your kids in everything as to what's most important. Your kids are living in that environment. You bring them to church once a week. And do you think that once a week is going to really influence them and to help them to see the worldview from the Christian perspective? Dream on. It ain't gonna happen. And so why am I saying all this? Because folks, going into the future, if we don't build a community where strong religious values are taught, where we gather together, and not only gather together on Sundays, but when you go in your home, you have strong Christian presence, where you pray at home, where your kids see that you have values at home, and that your values are not the secular world, that you are living a particular worldview in your home, and it is expressed in church. And we together, remember where I started, we're all in this together. If we don't establish in every one of our churches, but we can't do anything about anybody else, here, a place where kids will come and participate in a worldview that understands that they have a Father who created them, that their lives have meaning, that there is morality, that there is a yes and a no, and that life has a purpose, a meaning, and a future. If we don't do that, they're not going to get it anywhere else. As a matter of fact, they're going to get the exact opposite. That's why you see us every Sunday, not only every Sunday, every day of the week, working our butts off, trying to have retreats for kids, CCE, adult education, trying to get people to start understanding the worldview. Now, I'm going to scold a little bit. We have adult education classes. And we have adult education classes sometimes, and we will, in this parish, there's 4,000 families. And adult education classes, when we do them weekly, we get maybe 40 or 50 people. And I hear people saying to me, whoa, that's really good. I'm sorry, we're in church. I better be careful. It almost came out. That's poor. 40 people? What? What are we doing? We are in this together. And let me tell you, no more. The state is not going to support us anymore. So if we want for our future, our families, to be secular, that have no values and basically just live for today, and then when it's no longer pleasurable, blow your brains out because there's no reason to go on. Okay. But if we're going to continue with a Christian community, we've got to be in this together. We've got to be in this together. This year, thanks be to God, we've seen tremendous rises in our religious education programs, but it's still low, but it's not basement. And so that's where your money goes. Remember I was talking about stewardship? Your stewardship doesn't go to stupid stuff. The money that you give goes specifically to establish at St. Cyril's a place where the worldview of Jesus Christ is preached and lived, where we pass it on. And we've got to do it together. That's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing here. So, I have riled you enough with my rantings, and I have no final go get them as a closing, so I will just shut up.